James, welcome. Welcome to Employ Bland.
It's an absolute pleasure to be here, Chris. You know, I've followed the kind of the podcast and the videos for a while, and I was quite keen to get on. So I kind of was proactive and reached out saying, when can I get on?
Well, do you know what? When I got the message from you, I was really happy, actually, because you and I have been in contact probably for the last year or so.
Yeah.
And it just felt like a really natural coming together for, you know, to do this. But, you know, thank you for reaching out, because I was absolutely buzzing when you did.
No, it's an absolute pleasure to be here. And what a great kind of setup you've kind of got here. It is kind of great to actually do it face-to-face, because I know we're both kind of podcasters, but rarely do we do this actual face-to-face stuff. So it's great to kind of just actually kind of have a proper conversation, right?
You know? Absolutely. Well, it's nice to have a proper podcasting professional in the room, because nobody would have seen this. But I did have a couple of mic problems. I won't profess to being a podcast expert, but we'll just say I'm very grateful that you're in the room with me today. But look, before we kick off, brief introductions. James Whitelock, Managing Director of Thinking Circles.
Yep.
Marketing agency, but very specifically in the recruitment sector.
Yeah.
Could you tell us a little bit more about Thinking Circles?
Yeah, so we're 12 years old now. There's 8 of us in the team. And as you said, we only really kind of deal in the employment and HR sector. So our main clients are recruitment agencies, HR tech providers, and we do a little bit in the kind of in-house space as well, which I know that's what we're going to kind of talk a little bit around today. And we're a kind of a 360 marketing agency, so we're a little bit different to some of the other agencies out there in the fact that one of my team becomes your marketing manager,
okay,
basically. So we kind of took a little bit of a leaf out of the recruitment space in the fact that I've got people on the bench, and I put them into seats into business it's usually around about a kind of day a week or so,
okay,
and they run that kind of whole marketing department for that business, whether that's a recruitment agency, whether that's a tech provider, and when it comes to the in-house space, then we work along those kind of TA teams to kind of do all the recruitment marketing, EVP, employer branding, that kind of stuff as well. And that's us, really,
which kind of makes sense, because there are real peaks and troughs in activity in that world. So I can imagine if there was a huge piece of EVP work you were doing, you're peaking out on capacity and time and resource. Once you've got it executed, I suppose you can come back down to here and not use you quite as much. Is that the kind of...
Well, what we try and do, if it is a piece of kind of employee value proposition kind of work, yeah, that is quite kind of intense. But then we can then move into the delivery of that as well. So the kind of employer branding, the recruitment marketing, so helping those businesses then kind of spread that kind of that employer brand and EVP within the business and external to the business, whatever that might be, and help those kind of TA and recruitment teams then understand what they need to do, you know, build collateral for them, help them understand what the kind of journey they want to take those kind of candidates on, as well as numerous other things to you know that kind of involved in that kind of space. But yeah, you're right, it's very kind of front loaded, but then there's resources in the business and kind of things we then do to kind of like to deliver that and roll that out, basically.
Brilliant. Okay, superb. So we're going to talk about something I'm really interested in, actually, and we've purposely kind of not gone into too much detail together, because I think we want to get it all out in this session here. But it's team branding versus employer branding, which hopefully the listeners, viewers, you know, will have some engaging opinions on too. But look, before we go into that,
sure,
it'd be really nice to get under the bonnet of James Whitelock, understand you a little bit more and kind of your background and you know, where your kind of passion for this space has come from. So can we kind of rewind? And you can rewind as far back as you like. You know, you can go wherever you like with this.
Sure.
But you're obviously the, you know, MD of Thinking Circles now, but let's rewind however far you want, 5, 10, 15 years, whatever. You know, where did you grow up? What was your kind of first kind of taste into even getting into business in any capacity?
Sure. So I grew up in Luton, though I've kind of lost the accent a little bit, thanks to my mum. And I guess, you know, my kind of interest in design came because what was one of the only things I could actually do. I could draw, basically. And so I went to university and studied fine art. So I've got a degree in fine art, which is painting, printmaking, and sculpture. And quickly after leaving university, I realized that it was all pretty useless and I couldn't actually make much money from it because there was much better artists out there, right? You know. And so I taught myself graphic design. And that was kind of earlier versions of Photoshop and Illustrator on dodgy copies that I'd found and kind of managed to get hold of. And then went into becoming a graphic designer. Worked with in a merchandising company for a while, which basically meant, you know, taking kind of logos and putting them onto pens, basically, yeah. Which wasn't particularly exciting. And then moved into working at Select Appointments, where I kind of helped do a little bit of kind of web design and web development. I wasn't very good at the web development because I'm not a natural coder. My brain doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
But I wasn't bad at the design. But I also started to kind of cut my teeth understanding kind of, you know, user experience and things like that at that point. From there, I moved on to the business that owned Select Appointments, which was Vedior at the time. Mm-hmm. Vedior owned, obviously, Select Appointments, Jocelyn Rowe, Abraxas, and all these kind of big kind of brands. And I worked at their Vedior's head office in the UK as head of websites, basically. So I oversaw all the kind of group websites across the entire globe. I also oversaw their internal job board, which at the time was, I think, the largest kind of privately held recruitment agency job board in the world.
Wow.
And I saw that. That business was then taken over by Randstad and worked over at Randstad and worked in Amsterdam for a few years at that point. Moved on then to Empresaria, became the digital strategy manager at Empresaria under Miles Hunt, who was still the kind of CEO at that point. And that's when I kind of started really to kind of understand how recruitment and how recruitment marketing worked, especially under some of the guidance of Miles. And Miles has become a bit of a mentor to me over the kind of mm-hmm. years. We both left Empresaria around about the same time. He actually helped me negotiate my first contract when I started off my own, which was a kind of the proto version of Think in Circles at that point. And then, you know, since then, we've just kind of that was 12 years ago, and we've just kind of continued to grow, really. The offering has changed a little bit over those times, but yeah, that's kind of us and me in a nutshell, how we kind of got to where we are, yeah.
And it's really interesting because certainly from my experience and my background is, you know, I was in technology recruitment for a good 10 plus years before moving into software or rec tech with voice. But you know, if I look over the last kind of 13 to 15 years, it's only really in the last 5 or 6 years, people have, I feel anyway, have taken recruitment marketing, employer branding seriously.
Mm.
And it must be quite nice. You know, you've been flying that flag for well over 15 years by the sounds of things, but that bedrock of knowledge that you've gained in that experience to now, hopefully, we're in a little bit of a heyday in the space because everybody realizes how fundamental recruitment marketing, employer branding,
yep.
and all things associated are.
Yeah.
But it's it must feel quite nice for you just to have that core, because a lot of people are getting into it now for the first time, as opposed to you, that you've got this run up that's 10 plus years old. That's a nice thing to have.
Yeah, I mean, it was a hard slog at the start, and there were times when I just didn't think I was going to stay within the space. But yeah, I mean, you're right. There's credence has been real is kind of given now to recruitment marketing generally. It's still a hard sell. I mean, we've come across a numerous kind of early kind of recruit marketers on their journey who probably find that recruitment marketing isn't for them.
Mm.
Because it can be quite, especially if you're doing it for a recruitment agency, it can be pretty difficult, it can be pretty hard, right? You are a B2C marketer, you're a B2B marketer, and you're an employer brander all at the same time if you're working for a recruitment agency, because you've got to bring on talent, you've got to bring on clients, and you've got to bring on staff.
Absolutely,
as a
yeah.
marketeer. Now, that's not the same with every agency, but probably that's what we kind of have to deal with, especially with recruitment agencies, and it can be a real hard slog, and it can be really different. You've got to have a lot of kind of skills under the bonnet. When you're working in-house, it's a little easier. You've kind of got to have the employer branding piece and the talent attraction piece, but not necessarily the B2B bit.
Yeah.
But you're right. It's nice to see that there's a real community now of recruitment marketeers. There's a lot of people kind of in it. There's a lot of people with a bit kind of a lot of experience, a lot of people kind of talking about it. And just generally, even smaller businesses understand it. This is something they've kind of got into, whether it's just, you know, producing more content, producing kind of podcasts, producing something that they can then latch onto as a added value kind of piece that is outside of here's a job and stick it on a job board kind of scenario. Yeah.
And it feels like a bit of a no-brainer to me, because if we look at just our just human habits generally, purchasing habits and commercial habits, you know, marketing for centuries has been a fundamental part of purchasing anything, whether it's a product in a shop, whether it's a job, whatever it is. And it's strange how it's taken so long for us to realize that it is the bedrock of selling jobs and selling businesses and selling employer brands and whatever else. But we're here now, that's the main thing.
We are indeed. Exactly, yeah, we got there eventually.
Exactly. So look, moving into to our main topic, which is probably worth us speaking a little bit about. So we're talking about team branding versus employer branding. It'd be really nice if we kicked off, you know, what is team branding?
Sure.
And how does it differ, I suppose, to employer branding?
Well, if you take employer branding, it's usually kind of covering your entire business, right? And it is a strategy that is used to entice in new members of staff, or it's or retain the kind of current staff that you've kind of got. That's usually run from the talent acquisition team and the internal recruiters, and it's not usually necessarily touched by the marketing team to a certain extent. When it comes to team branding, you're getting a lot more kind of granular. So you're talking around, are there kind of certain specific teams within your business? Are there areas within your business? Are there departments within your business that require special attention because they've got slightly different needs? They have slightly different kind of flavors of the kind of company culture that need to be marketed differently outside of the employer brand. Still obviously kind of within the kind of the kind of corporate marketing, still in the same colors and all that kind of thing, but have a slightly kind of subtle differences. Because the example I might well use is you've kind of got you've got your dev team, you know, their needs and their culture and the way they work, it's probably very different to how your HR team are working, or how, you know, your kind of your accounts team are working. And the way that you market that, there's subtle differences, right? And I think that's the fundamental difference between the kind of the two, basically.
The reason I like the concept is that I think it can become a lot more manageable, especially if you're starting a new program. And if it, and this still falls under the, I suppose, the employer brand umbrella, but we're looking at a more micro kind of aspect of it. But I think when a lot of people, with certainly in my experience, think of employer brand, it's this huge mountain to climb. It's like this, oh yeah, I know we need to get around to doing that. I know we've kind of set aside budget, but it's, you know, they're looking at this like Mount Everest task of work. What I quite like about team branding is you can just say, well, look, you know, using your example, let's just focus on the dev team. Let's spend a month, 2-3 months, whatever, focusing on the dev team, create a program of work around the dev team. It's a much smaller number of stakeholders to manage. It's if anything does go wrong, it's a much smaller mistake that we're going to make. But all of a sudden, you're taking this Mount Everest task and you're just putting it into this like micro bubble, and you can, I think you can have a lot more fun with it. You can test a lot more things. You can split test. You can, there's just, would you agree with that?
Completely, yeah. I mean, and you can kind of almost use it as a template then for kind of going back up the ladder for your actual main kind of employer brand, right? So there's businesses that we've worked with where you start at a team level and work your way upwards, instead of kind of working with this kind of juggernaut of an employer brand and working down and trying to kind of like fit, you know, round pegs into square holes. Why not start lower, where the need is greater, and where the expertise kind of sits to a certain extent, and getting those kind of teams on board to kind of become advocates for the business and all those kind of cool stuff. Start there, use that as a template, and write, okay, we can use that, what we've done there, and the tactics we've done for these guys over here, and these guys over here, and these guys over here. And actually, I think it's one of these things that in time, you're going to see some businesses kind of playing around with that a bit more. As I said, instead of having this overarching huge employer brand, especially bigger businesses, you're going to see them going, right, let's just kind of just have these kind of teams kind of have their own specific brands and play that way, and that will eventually make up what the employer brand is.
Absolutely.
You know, I think that's the one. I think there's still going to be room for these just kind of overarching kind of EVP and all that kind of stuff. And I think traditionally that's the way you would go. But I think in time you're going to start to see a bit kind of that becomes a bit more disparate. Yeah. And yeah, just working on, right, let's get the dev team up, let's get the HR team, let's get the accounts, let's get these guys, or maybe even regionally and things like that. And I think you'll start to see people start to play with it in that way. So, right, you know, we've kind of, let's just focus on Italy, let's just focus on Germany, let's focus on, and you know, and those all definitely do have, you know, subtle cultural differences and kind of play with it in that sense, as opposed to, you know, you've got a huge kind of great, you know, corporate business spread across 20 countries, speaking 10 different languages and all this kind of thing. You know, it's very difficult to get one kind of EVP that's going to be absolutely 100% perfect for that entire business. So there are other ways of kind of tackling it. A good example is the guys, you know, kind of, you know, IBM, for instance, have this kind of small, big, small kind of culture where they, you know, you're part of IBM, but you're also part of this little kind of your own team. And that's where you spend all of your time majority. And you pretty much probably rarely have any interaction with any of the other teams, kind of, you know, the like I said, the accountants or the HR or whatever else, right, or biz dev or sales.
Yeah.
So it makes sense for you to, if you're kind of applying to be part of that team, that's what you kind of get to know. This is the culture within that team. This is what happens within there. This is how they work. You know, this is where they're based. This is how the structure of it works, as opposed to having something that's more kind of generalistic and kind of getting lost in it all, really.
Absolutely. And let's face it, different teams, different regions, different kind of business categories, they will have different agendas.
Mm.
You know, for example, you know, technology, you know, it's known pretty much, you know, globally in most companies, you know, there is a real shortage of female software engineers, mm-hmm. and females in dev teams generally. Not everywhere, obviously,
yep.
But that is one thing. But that as an agenda point for that part of the business, it's potentially very, very different to the top agenda point that they've got in their marketing team,
yeah.
For example. So I think, you know, when you look at the holistic employer brand, like globally for an enterprise business, there's typically a finite period of time where they're, you know, they're doing, you know, workshops with teams, they're collating, you know, gathering data. There's a finite period of time that they've typically got to bring this stuff,
yep.
together, to then start creating content, to then start distributing in the channels they think are gonna perform best, et cetera, et cetera. The problem with that is you've got all of these kind of micro agendas in you know, these different parts of your business. It's really complex, isn't it?
Mm.
And I think if you don't like create these individual blueprints in individual parts of the business, it's actually really difficult to know the problems that you're trying to solve.
Yeah.
Because there's so many different problems in so many parts of your business.
You're making assumptions, right, at that point. And, you know, your point around kind of diversity, you know, every business obviously wants to be more diverse, whether it comes to kind of, you know, gender or kind of disability or whatever that might, but there might be areas of the business that are in need of that more than others. And you've kind of picked out, you know, there is a shortage of kind of female developers. So that's a great example that the dev team might need more kind of marketing and advertising and a specific kind of agenda around kind of changing that within that team, which you might necessarily kind of be missed over if you were kind of under the entire kind of EVP, right? So I think that's a great example.
Yeah. So James, one of the points that I think it'd be quite nice for us to discuss, debate, you know, tackle, is scalability, affordability.
Mm-hmm.
Naturally, when you're looking at something bigger and holistic, you know, you could probably do something on a budget, you know, because you're covering the whole thing. You're going to miss a lot of things. Whenever you micro in on anything and you spend a lot of time in one smaller area, typically you start thinking, sounds expensive.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you're right to a certain extent, right? it is probably cheaper in the long run to have an overarching kind of employer brand, but you might not necessarily get the success out of it you're kind of looking for. And again, you can kind of miss areas. I mean, doing an employer kind of having an agency, for instance, build you an EVP and an employer brand kind of strategy probably isn't cheap anyway, right? So actually, there are some kind of tactical kind of advantages for doing it at a smaller scale, which we kind of discussed, right, about that you can kind of be quite agile with it, you can kind of do some testing around it, and it probably won't be as expensive as doing the kind of full, and you can shake it down to a certain extent. And if you're going to make mistakes, that's probably the best place to kind of make those mistakes before you kind of do them. That said, you know, it is going to be still going to be kind of comparatively expensive when you're kind of doing it on a team level. And we kind of you have to be honest with clients that when we're working with them, that, you know, at this level, you know, if you were to kind of do that for every single department within the business, it scales up and it suddenly gets kind of, you know, you're looking at tens of thousands, whatever else that might well kind of be at that point. But if you just kind of use one team as your kind of test base and then kind of roll it out with them, that's the kind of how we would suggest kind of rolling out, right? If you're going to go down this route. Mm-hmm. If you've already got an EVP and an employer brand kind of for the entire company already, then actually you've probably done a lot of the hard work already and you've set the kind of trajectory that you want to kind of take. And so the team brand and is just an abstraction slightly of that, right, already. So you've probably done all the hard work. You're not going to necessarily need to be rewriting huge amounts of collateral. At that point, it's more around kind of understanding the needs of that team, the kind of the personalities in that team, the culture within that team, you know, the difficulties that team are having with regards to recruiting, and just, you know, just abstracting what you've kind of done already, just to kind of make it easier for that team to do the kind of hiring. So that's, I think, some of the kind of the kind of pros. But the cons is it can look expensive from the outside, and it probably is a little bit more expensive to go down that route. But you're probably likely to have more success.
Absolutely.
That's the big pro, right?
And you know, delivering anything employer brand related, you know, delivering success is all about it's benefiting the bottom line, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And what I like about this approach is that it could, I think on the face of it, like you've already illustrated, it could seem more expensive, but it's also, it must be a damn sight easier to illustrate ROI.
Mm.
That's what I like about it. So yeah, fine. A heavy cost could go up front. You know, you want to create a deep level blueprint on, you know, marketing in, you know, Johannesburg or technology San Francisco, whatever it is, you know, you're getting laser focused in one area of the business. Could be a startup, could be a big enterprise, whatever. But ultimately, for you to get adoption of anything marketing related, really, and you know this, you know, so much better than I do, but, you know, if you can demonstrate that punch on the bottom line and that impact and, you know, just lifting the business, you know, from a pound notes perspective, that's how you make long-term success of this stuff, isn't it?
Completely. So, and a great way to do that. So if you work with a business, well, if we're working with a business and they've got 200 open vacancies at any one time, right? That's a lot of roles to try and kind of cover. If you get down to a granular level, and so you're working with, let's just take this dev team again, right? And they've got two open roles. Mm. It's a much easier chunk to kind of to bite off and to fill those kind of roles when you're kind of doing it on that level. And also, what you might find when you kind of get down to that level, you're going to find that certain teams have, you know, more difficult to recruit for. Mm. So if you're doing it at this kind of overarching level and you've got these 200 and you're not filling them, you might find that there's some really sticky points, basically. Whereas if you're working with them individually, these teams, you can work on those sticky points and kind of work around them and find it and say, right, these guys need five and we over the last kind of 3 months we fill four.
Yeah.
Fine, right? You know, that's success. Whereas if you say you've got 200 and you've filled 50, and it's like, okay, but where, you know, then that doesn't look as good, right?
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? So I think you can, And it does sound like maybe I'm kind of fudging the numbers, but I think it means when you get down to those kind of granular levels, you can have a much more kind of in-depth idea of how the roles that need filling and how to fill those roles and what that team really needs.
Absolutely.
You know, which sometimes can be lost when it kind of moves up the chain, especially with bigger businesses where you've kind of got the team leader who says, right, I need a junior developer or I need an engineer or whatever it might be. That then goes to the kind of hiring manager. The hiring manager then goes to the kind of talent acquisition. And, you know, you've kind of got these steps where it's kind of where you have to go through to either get sign off or get kind of actioned, that by the time it's Chinese whispers, by the time it gets to the top, right? Whereas if you kind of got a much more direct kind of line of communication with those teams, then I think that's going to make that whole kind of process a lot easier, a lot smoother, and again, prove that return on investment that everyone is working more efficiently.
Yeah, absolutely, I'd agree. I'd also, the other reason I like, you know, from an ROI, affordability, scalability point of view, is that I actually think it'd be really nice to create, you know, a list of things that don't work, you know, because that's just as important. Because trial and error, split testing, A-B testing, however you want to kind of paraphrase it, is I just don't think there's enough of it being done. And it's kind of, it can often be kind of, not frowned upon, but if badged in the wrong way, it's like, oh, you're making mistakes, that's not working. You're not getting enough applications. They're the wrong types of applications. Come on, you know, pull your socks up, do this better. But what I really like about this is in one micro part of your business, you know, one team, you know, from a team branding point of view, you know, figure out what it is that doesn't work and make that your focus. You know, we need to know everything that doesn't work, because obviously on the flip side of that is the stuff that does.
Yep.
But again, I think embracing that should be a cultural thing, shouldn't it?
I agree, sir. And that whole kind of, when you get into that kind of A-B testing, split testing, that's you're getting into the realms of kind of asking people to be almost marketeers when they're not really marketeers, right, at that point. And hence why there's businesses like us, you know, get involved, why you might have an internal kind of recruitment marketing team to do that stuff on their behalf, who can kind of understand, right, you know, let's just change some of the phrasing. Let's just change some of this. Let's add a video to that instead of those kind of things. So I think, you know, that's when it becomes quite powerful. And you're right. You can kind of just, you can make those mistakes, figure out what isn't working, and then leave only the good bits at that point.
Absolutely.
Right?
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
We've got a situation with one of our customers that's probably quite relevant. Autoglass. Hope Gemma won't mind me talking about Autoglass, but they're looking for technicians. So the people that, you know, you get a smash in your windscreen.
Yep.
Windscreen needs to come out, or it needs to be fixed, replaced, whatever. But again, without kind of running the same kind of theme throughout, but there's a distinct lack of female technicians
right.
in Autoglass. They're acutely aware. They're making huge strides to change that. And we're working on some digital job descriptions with them. We looked at some data on a campaign that they were working on, their technician digital job descriptions. And there was, from the data that we had, only 2%, 98% male engagement and 2% female. And that's obviously a huge problem. And there was something wrong with the engagement process. But what they did, and they did this completely off their own accord, but they switched it up. They created a little bit more female representation in their job ads. The content they were leading with front and center had a little bit of female representation, but not very much. But they switched up their tactics anyway. You know, that wasn't on us. That was completely on them. So I won't take any shine away from what they did. But they switched it up and they got in excess of 30% on the next kind of, you know, batch of data that came through. The data was 30% plus on female engagement. But again, I think it's another key reason why just focusing and doubling down.
Yep.
And you've probably got other kind of, you know, scenarios and stories of situations you've worked in. But again, without being laser focused in one part of your business and looking at data and kind of understanding what's going on, it's really difficult, isn't it, to figure out what you need to fix.
Well, the example's great, because I would imagine that, you know, autos probably do have a kind of an overarching EVP, but, you know, they've got a specific lack, right, and a specific need, so they've adapted it, right? And I bet it isn't just kind of there's a bit more kind of female representation in the design. There's probably a little bit more talk around kind of flexible working and things like that. that, all this kind of, which is, you know, a bit obvious, but still kind of stuff that's going to probably lead to the kind of, you know, different people kind of applying for these jobs because there's a bit more kind of, it's more kind of associated with them and it kind of works to their needs. And that's a great example, right? I mean, and, you know, we've kind of got examples of where we have kind of worked with kind of, I don't know, let's kind of, in the kind of technical business, IT businesses, where similar kind of scenarios, they don't have that kind of representation within those kinds of businesses. So you just kind of just twisted that dial a little bit. So it's become more focused on the, on not necessarily kind of overtly kind of branding stuff, but just appealing more to the kind of sensibilities of the people that you want to kind of bring on board. As I said, you know, mentioning things around kind of flexible working, you know, kind of working with in and around school hours and things like that, just can be simple things, right? That can really kind of just turn that kind of dial a little bit in your favor. And it's not kind of rocket science to do a lot of this kind of stuff. But definitely, it needs to be pitched right. And again, this is me obviously kind of building our kind of marketing kind of part within that. It needs to be kind of, you know, you need some professionals behind it to kind of make sure that's the right representation. It's not overrepresented. It's not crudely done and things like that, right? It's not biased.
It needs to be authentic, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, and that, I mean, when you talk around kind of employer branding, authenticity comes a lot into this kind of, I'm sure we'll kind of tackle a little bit of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Agree. Leaning into kind of actionable advice, you know, be it kind of, you know, talent leaders, early stage employer brand recruitment marketing leaders, you know, if they were to kind of think about doubling down on team branding, what tips, advice would you give them?
Well, there's one main one, right? Is just talk to those teams, which is obvious, which I think in, you know, can be so just kind of, you can make all these assumptions, right? And again, within kind of employer branding and kind of TA, you can get a lot of pressure from above. And so you just kind of make these assumptions. Yeah, the senior board are saying, right, we need to do this, this, and this. And you get a lot of pressure on you. And so you just go hell for leather trying to recruit, right? And not really taking time to kind of get your feet on the ground and think about it. And if you are going down this team branding kind of scenario, then you need to be talking to these people in the teams and understanding what they want, why some of these people took the job in the first place, you know, those kind of things, and almost kind of build out your ideal candidates for these kinds of roles, right? And why are these people staying with you? Because of this, this, and this, and this, and lean into that when it comes to your kind of marketing, your collateral that you're kind of putting out there. So it is all about that kind of communication at that level. And try not to play that kind of that Chinese whispers game, especially if you're in big organisations where an order comes in from a team and goes through about three different stages before it even kind of gets to you, and then you just kind of you're floundering a bit at that point. Now, there's nothing obviously stopping you going back from those teams, but a lot of businesses don't work that kind of way. So just make those connections with the teams that you kind of you're hiring for, and sit down with them and just kind of get under the skin a bit. And then talk to businesses like us, or if you've got internal kind of marketeers, you know, who work on the kind of on the recruitment side, then kind of work with them specifically to kind of to make sure that you're and build out little kind of like, you know, stakeholder teams, right? To kind of whoever the team leader is, maybe in the dev team, you know, you all three of you kind of work together, basically just kind of building out these kind of campaigns. And it doesn't need to be like, you know, earth-shatteringly kind of like, you know this doesn't need to be, you know, the particularly original. It just needs to be relevant, right? Absolutely. That's what it needs to be. So it's having those kind of conversations, I think, is embedding yourself within those teams is the best piece of advice I can kind of give anyone, right, who's going to go down this route.
Which is great advice. And I suppose in that same vein, you know, what are your thoughts on, you know, that whether it's a, you know, a TA leader, recruitment marketing, employer brand, you know, whichever kind of role that person might be in, but taking a bit of pressure off yourself and workshopping some of this stuff. So go into that dev team, you know, go into that, you know, whichever team you're working with, and have some open conversations. You know, this is where we are. This is the problem we're up against. You know, it's very difficult to attract great talent. We all know that. Would you advise that? You know, start getting some ideas.
I think so. I mean, I wouldn't expect a huge amount from those teams initially because they probably don't know the difficulties, right? Because a lot of the time what they're doing is putting in an order form to fill a role.
Yeah.
And they probably aren't aware of all the difficulties necessarily in the market themselves, right? So they might not be as close to the coalface as you might well be. I think there's definitely a room for having a conversation with them and understanding the culture within that team. But I wouldn't necessarily expect them to know what outside forces are playing upon what the difficulties are within the recruitment space, right? And why there aren't enough kind of female developers and why and how they get in. Again, I wouldn't expect my dev team to be recruitment marketeers, right? That's kind of what I want to get from those conversations is understand a bit more around that business, that team, and how that team operates, how they kind of gel together, the other connections with other parts of the business, what they actually do. So I think there's a role for sitting down with them for kind of half a day and finding out, right, okay, these guys do this. Beyond that, I wouldn't necessarily expect them to do kind of move into the kind of marketing piece because they're not marketeers, they're developers. And so I don't expect them. So I want to understand them. I don't want to do it, basically.
Absolutely. Yeah. And what about the creation of content? Because content is kind of a critical part of this process, isn't it? And then distributing that content in the places that you naturally think you're going to get the best levels of engagement with the right types of people. But in regards to going on that journey and types of content and, you know, actionable advice, I suppose, in where should you get started with creating content, be it kind of video, be it whatever type of content it might be, but any advice around the best kind of steps to take to get your kind of teeth cut in that process?
So I think the first off is if you are the recruitment marketeer, then you have to own the content, right? It's you who's going to create that. You're going to be kind of driving that. You're going to be leading that. Don't expect anyone else to have that input into it. That said, it always needs to kind of run past, especially if you're dealing with quite technical roles and technical kind of terms and the collateral itself has to kind of have that kind of flavor to it as well. Then it needs to run through through the team and the team leaders that you're kind of hiring for that role for. And when it comes down to, that's that part. The other side of it is you can go completely down the advocacy side, right? And you can try and get those teams a bit more involved if they are kind of that way inclined. If you've got someone in there who is a bit more kind of gregarious, a bit more outgoing, then that is someone who can probably be a bit of a face for that team. And that's a great way to do that kind of team branding, because then you've got someone who's talking about it and, you know, their role there, their experiences there, and they can be the face of that part of the business. And that kind of takes some of the pressure off you when it comes to kind of the actual content that needs creating, because you're just saying, look, today we're gonna sit down, we're gonna do a video, and we're gonna talk around this, you know, what is your role, or where you came from, why you stay, and those kinds of things. And you can build out that person's journey within that business, which again, when you're kind of talking to other potential kind of candidates, that's what they want to know. They want to know who they're going to be working with, where they can potentially see their career going, and those kinds of things, and why people stay and don't leave. Those are the kind of things that are going to make people apply, as opposed to here's a job description. You know, and as the recruitment marketeer's job, it's us to kind of be the oversight of that. If we're going down the advocacy route, then it's actually a bit of an easier job because, you know, we can kind of get that team involved. If we're going to be in a position where we're creating all the stuff ourselves, then we definitely have to go down a situation where we're kind of getting sign off from those guys, but especially if these are kind of technical kind of style roles. And I know we do that kind of thing all the time because we're not experts in that, right? We're recruitment marketeers. We're not kind of technical experts. So we have to kind of have that kind of that sign off process. With regards to the type of content, you know, it kind of depends on where the networks, the candidates you want to kind of try to interact with are. If they're on a platform like LinkedIn or Facebook, you know, you're going to be leaning much more into that kind of video, right? Because that's the kind of role. If they are on X/Twitter or on Threads, obviously you've only got kind of a certain amount of kind of characters, so you've kind of got to figure out how that kind of is going to go. If they're on Discord or Reddit, it's a slightly different kind of approach to it, more kind of copywritten, but much more kind of community focused, on not being too sales focused, not being too kind of like, you know. So there's it, it there's a lot of factors that kind of come into it, and it kind of depends on where these networks and communities are that you want to kind of interact with, and what that platform potentially lets you do, right? Mm. Obviously, when it comes down to your own website, your own career site, it's a free for all, right? You can put everything on there that you want, but you've got to get the people there in the first place. You've got to be starting to kind of reach out. Again, if you're just using job boards, then that is a very limiting kind of content scenario. If you're using everything else, then you've got a bit more freedom, right? Absolutely. If you're using podcasts, is right. You know, there was one business I knew that every time someone new joined the business, they were invited onto the podcast, right? You know, and those kinds of things. So there's all those kind of things where you can be a bit more creative.
And it's another reason I really like the team branding kind of ethos, because I think, you know, going back to your point that you mentioned a couple of minutes ago on, you know, where are these people, you know, engaging with content? But doing a micro audit, you know, could be part of your EVP, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but understand, you know, where do the people in that team currently, you know, engage with content?
Yep.
Are they, you know, are you doing an audit and you're finding primarily they are on X?
Yeah.
It feels weird saying that.
Twitter, I know, didn't it?
Let's just say Twitter.
Yeah.
But are they? Are they spending 78% of their time on Twitter? Are the, you know, people in your team from underrepresented communities, are they, you know, typically engaging with content in a particular place? And then great, you know, we need to be creating engaging content that's authentic, and we need to be visible in those places. You know, if that's on our agenda to be attracting talent in those areas. But it's another reason why I really like the team branding ethos, because you can just go laser focused into all of these types of things, can't you?
Exactly.
Good stuff.
Brilliant.
Okay. So, James, I'd like to close it out with, I say it's a common theme. It's something we've done a couple of times. You'll be the third person, but it'll be a lot more common moving forward. But can you give anybody out there, again, TA leaders, recruitment marketing leaders, recruitment operations, you know, people, etc., how do you avoid being employer bland.
Well, I'm going to sum it up in one word, which is the journey, all right? Which is technically two words. The journey, right? And whether that is the journey that your candidates are taking on your website, whether it's the journey that you're taking people there, that needs to be engaging, exciting, relevant, and natural, right? And it needs to kind of, and if you haven't ever done that yourself as a TA or a recruiter, do it, right? What's the process that someone gets to find you and your brand and apply for those kind of roles? And what does that look like? Is it incredibly difficult to do? Is it a real ball ache, right? Is it painful? Is there kind of like steps that literally just boot you out of the process all the way along that kind of along there? Because though that seems like a kind of a process-driven kind of scenario, that's actually all affecting your employer brand at the same time, right? Because if someone gets to a certain point and they find that actually that you've got a massive, great, big kind of application form that might be all needed, you might need to do it, but it's not broken down and it's not said you're at stage one, stage two, stage three, or something like that, people just leave, right? And then you've lost them. And then they suddenly thought, they might be great, they might be the best potential kind of candidate you could have ever had, but you've lost them because of your kind of the process you've kind of got in place, because it's just so laborious, or it's unengaging, or something's not right. So look into that journey, take that journey yourself, right? And then, you know, make decisions based on that.
Such a good point. You know, doing an audit on your own process. And it sounds so simple, but I bet that, you know, if we're all really honest, you know, how many of us have done that? And it's a really, really good point, actually, and actionable advice, which I like. But James, thank you so much for making the journey over here as well. I know you're relatively local, but you've still made the journey over. It's really nice to do this face-to-face. Always enjoy catching up with you. So many insightful kind of, you know, views, and just so much value to add in this conversation. So thanks so much.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Cheers.